Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, adventure. Later on, we hear Herbert Marshall as the man called X. But right now, it's one of two surviving broadcasts of the Foreign Assignment series. Jay Johnston and Vicky Volo were very popular actors on Mr. District Attorney and NBC series, and proved to be so popular that the pair were invited to be part of True Stories on a new series on the Mutual Broadcasting System called Foreign Assignment. This episode next marks the last in their short-lived run from January 8, 1944.
Mutual presents Foreign Assignment. Written by foreign correspondent Frank H. Ferry. Starring Jay Johnston as Brian Barry, with Maurice Wells as George X. Peabody and Vicky Vola as Carol Manning. At this moment, in press service bureaus all over the country, batteries of teletype machines are hammering out news dispatches flashing in from the war fronts of the world. Italy, London, Moscow, Chongqing, the Pacific, and one of the machines you hear? Listen. That machine is beating out a story written especially for you. A story unfolded against the screen of actual events that are making this minute's news. The story of Foreign Assignment. Algiers. According to reports reaching Allied headquarters here, the French underground has become demoralized by recent developments in the political relations of the United Nations, particularly as regards Allied policy on post-war France. The situation has caused grave concern to those who will command the coming invasion of Europe through France, for the success of the invasion may depend in no small measure on the strength and effectiveness of the French underground. Marseille, on the southeast coast of France, the melting pot of the Mediterranean, and the toughest city west of Suez, where life is naked and sinister and cheap. Tonight, a fog has rolled in from the sea, deepening the gloom in the labyrinth of narrow, dark streets rising steeply from the north side of the old port, and mixing the acrid tang of the sea with the smell of ships and rope and tar and oil and wine, and softening the prevailing sounds of the old quarter, the scuffling of heavy shoes along the cobbles, the clacking of high heels on their nightly rounds, the raucous laughter of too much wine, and the metallic music of battered pianos drifting from cheap cafes. In one street, three figures moving swiftly and silently through the billowing clouds of mist suddenly emerge from the gloom into the light of a cafe window, look at the name on the sign, and stop. From inside comes the deep-throated voice of a girl singing to the accompaniment of an old piano. The three, two men and a woman, press against the glass and look in. One man is tall, broad-shouldered, and rugged-looking. The other, shorter and older. The woman is young and blonde and very pretty. In a moment, the younger man says something to his companions, then enters the cafe alone.
Bonsoir, monsieur.
Hello, hello. So the man called you Jeanette.
But of course. Jeanette is my name.
Do you know everybody in here?
Oui, monsieur. Except you, monsieur.
Well, I'll tell you that in a minute. Let me signal my pals to come in first.
Who are you? You are not French.
Oh, not with my accent. And I'm not a Nazi playing games either.
You are an American.
That's right, sis. Brian Barry of the American Press.
An American journalist?
Yeah.
But what are you doing here? How did you get...
Now, wait a minute. Take it easy. You'll know it all in just a minute. Oh, hiya, fellas. Come on over here and sit down. It's okay. This is Jeanette, all right.
Oh, thank heaven.
Yeah, rather.
Glad to get off the street. A couple of Gestapo police passed right by.
Yes, and for a moment we weren't sure they were going to pass.
Jeanette, this is Carol Manning, British Intelligence.
British Intelligence?
And George X. Peabody in British Press.
How
good to know you, miss.
But what are you doing in Marseille? Why have you come here to see me?
Maybe this will make us friends, Jeanette.
Yes?
A l'outrance.
Okay.
Oh, we. Yeah. But why was not word gotten to me that you are coming?
Because we could get here as quickly as the message.
Yeah.
The time is precious right now.
Then you come from...
Allied headquarters in Algiers.
Yes, we were put ashore down the coast a little way, right off the dock.
Yeah, only George missed the shore and he dunked his pants a little.
They're as dry as I am now.
Oh, yeah. I am so sorry. It would be better if I served you a bottle of wine anyway. Oh. All of the men here are French, but not all of them are members of the organization. And others might suspect if we did nothing but talk.
Okay.
Well, couldn't we talk somewhere else?
I think we had better try to talk here for the present. And, oui, monsieur, oui, at once.
Gendarme.
No,
we'd better get out of this place as soon as possible.
Yes. A bit like sitting on the Gestapo's front stoop to stay in a public place.
Yeah, that's right. Say, this Jeanette's strictly A deck, huh?
Well, she's certainly not a dive singer.
No, I'd say she's been in the top nightclubs in Paris.
Yeah, and brains, too.
What more could you want, Brian?
Well...
Never mind.
Huh?
Shh. Here she comes.
Your wine, monsieur, monsieur.
Ah, merci, mademoiselle. Or something like that.
It is a risk every moment you are here.
Yeah.
So please talk as I open this wine.
Okay, say
right.
Something, fella.
We were told to contact you first and that you would put us in touch with Dr. Reynard.
Dr. Reynard?
Yes.
I have an important message for him from the Mediterranean Command.
Yeah.
Yes, but Dr. Reynard, he... He is no longer the leader of the underground here.
I believe the message is quite a bit to say to him about that.
Yes, but he...
Since he quit, the underground movement here has sort of gone to pieces, hasn't it?
Yes. Yes, that is true. He was the leader not only in action, but in thought.
And when he threw in the sponge, so did the rest, huh?
Yes, he resigned.
Mm-hmm.
And without his leadership... The rest lost heart.
Yeah.
Yes, well, Barry and I want to break a story on why he resigned. Without naming names, of course.
Yeah, the important thing is why and not who.
Exactly.
Yeah, you see, his reason is bound to be tied up with what's going on in politics outside of France. And if we can break the inside story on why there's a slump here, well, there might be some changes made.
Right.
But Dr. Reynard has got to come back now.
Yes, invasion day is not far off. And a lot depends on the underground.
Jeanette, we've got to see Dr. Reynard tonight.
That's right.
Very well. Dr. Reynard should be at his clinic still. I will give you a note to him.
Quick.
What is it, Charles?
The Gestapo come.
Brian.
Take it easy, Carol.
Where are they, Charles?
They just drive up outside.
Go to a table and keep calm, Charles.
Oui.
There is not time to hide you three. Perhaps this is just a routine visit. Anyway, do not speak unless you have to. Especially you, Mr. Barry. Your accent is very bad.
Yeah, okay, okay.
Here they come.
I'm sorry to intrude, Fräulein.
It is all right, Herr Major. We understand that you must make these routine inspections, and we do not
but
object.
But this is not a routine inspection, Fräulein.
Oh, no?
Three enemy agents are somewhere in the city of Marseille. They were seen entering the city from the east shortly after dusk. Two men and a woman. When they are found... Men and a woman. Let me see your identification cards, please. I said, let me see your identification cards.
Identification? Oh, yes, of course.
Mm. And yours?
Oh, here it is.
Yours. Now we shall see. Pierre Gillimont, Madeleine Dupré, Jean Miro. Yeah, take them. As I was about to say, when the three enemy agents are found, not only they, but those who harbored them, all will be executed. That is all. Fräulein, guten Abend.
Bonsoir, Herr Major.
Come los.
Oh, my word.
May we, the identification cards, how did you...
British intelligence fixed them up for us.
Hey, look, fellas, we better get started for Dr. Renard.
Right.
Oh, I am so sorry I cannot take you there, but I must not leave here now.
Yes, we understand.
I will write a note to Dr. Renard for you to take with you.
Oh, good.
I will be just a moment.
Say, you better take a big slug out of this bottle, fellas. We might be in a tight fight with a short stick.
should be nearly there by now.
Yeah, according to Jeanette's directions, the doc's place is just around the next corner.
Wait a minute.
Huh? What's the matter? What is...
Shh. Huh? I would have sworn I heard footsteps behind us.
Huh? Yeah, that was pretty good wine, Toots. Here, come on, let's go.
Yes, yes.
Brian.
Huh? Mm-hmm. What? What now?
There was something moving back there. I saw it.
Hey, look, Carol, look. You've let your imagination get all head up.
Yes, yes, I say, old girl. You've got my hair on end.
Yeah, mine too. Come on, we're wasting time.
Okay. If you are determined to play informer for the Gestapo, Arthur... You must stop running to us a bit of nothing.
But this time I have something important, Colonel Reiber. I swear it.
Yes. Well, what now, Arthur?
The three enemy agents you are looking for.
Yeah, yeah. What?
Oui, Herr Colonel.
What do you know about them?
I know where they are right now.
How do you know you're right about them?
I was at Jeanette's cafe when they arrived.
Jeanette? Yeah?
Ah, I have suspected Jeanette of working with the underground for some time.
Never mind that, so have we, but we've got nothing on her.
Arsène is even more clever than your own men, Herr Colonel.
What do you mean?
Some of your men came while the three were there, and even examined their false identification cards, and suspected nothing.
Don't confess.
But I suspected them from the time they first came in.
Never mind that kind of prattle. Tell me.
Well, I was not able to hear everything they say, but I hear them talking to Jeanette. And the accent of one of them is American.
Yeah?
The other man is English. And the woman, she could be either one. But I think she is American.
Well?
Jeanette gave them a note and they left. I follow. And right this minute, dear Colonel, they are at Dr. Renard's clinic.
Renard?
Oui.
I deeply appreciate, Miss Manning and gentlemen, the sentiment expressed in the message which you have brought to me and the great risk you have taken in order to deliver it.
Well, what's the verdict, Dr. Renard?
My resignation of the leadership of the underground movement was not, Mr. Berry, an impulsive action.
We are certain of that, though.
Yes, of course.
Sure.
It was reached after careful weighing of many important aspects. It was based on... what I consider to be sound reasons.
Well, Mr. Peabody and I, I'd like to take a story back with us, Doctor, about those reasons.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, but I prefer not to discuss it.
But you would not be identified with them, sir. We plan to use them as a basis.
Am sorry, Mr. Peabody.
Say, now, look, Doctor. George and I, along with Miss Manning here, have gambled our necks to come over here for that story.
I appreciate that fact, Mr. Berry, and so stated a moment ago.
Aren't you overlooking a more important fact, sir?
I do not understand.
The fact that your reasons for resigning are not your exclusive property.
That's right.
I still do not understand.
Well, George means there are millions of people in this world, your own people and everybody else who's giving their blood, sweat, and tears to smash the Nazis. And it means all those millions have a just share in your reason.
Exactly.
Please, gentlemen.
Now, look, Doctor. The Allies are on the verge of starting the invasion that'll tell the tale. And if it flops, it could be because the French underground wasn't hitting on all cylinders. And what would that make you?
Mr. Berry.
There'd be a lot of people wanting to know why you let them down. And they might not stop with just asking you.
Why have you stopped fighting the Nazis, sir?
Why have you stopped helping those who want to help your people?
Why have you turned your back on the fate of the French people?
That is enough.
But are your reasons enough, sir?
Can they cover what you've done and leave your conscience free?
How about that, Doctor?
Stop it, I tell you, stop.
I will give my reasons. Okay, we're listening, Doctor.
After the fall of France, I joined eagerly in the underground movement because I believed that an Allied victory would not only free my people, but would guarantee them the chance to build a new France, a freer France. And what millions of other lads are fighting and dying for, and what other millions in Europe are suffering unspeakable tortures for. But what is the shape of things to come by the shape of things that are happening now? Certain of my own people who escaped to safety and comfort rather than share the sufferings and struggles of their fellow countrymen at home. Right now, they are planning for the day when they can ride a white horse down the Champs-Élysées and set up a dictatorship as absolute as the one they hypocritically profess to hate.
Yes, but Dr.
Reynolds... And more! Already, some nations are beginning to quarrel over spheres of influence. Already sacred pledges are being broken. Already a new scourge is beginning to sweep Europe. And already the dim outlines of future wars are to be seen. And you ask me to urge my people to pour out their blood to bring these things to pass? I will not! No! By the eternal heavens, I will not.
Yes, there are many others who feel as you do, Dr. Raynor. But they are carrying on.
That's right.
They are carrying on because their only hope for getting the kind of world they want to live in lies on the other side of the horizon. Not on this side.
If they stop now, they're sunk for keeps.
Many of the things you describe may come to pass. But the important thing is, the people believe they're fighting for a better world. And if they believe that's what they're fighting for, then that's what they are fighting for.
And if they keep on fighting for it, someday they're going to get it. Good night, Miss Manning. Gentlemen.
Good night, sir.
Good night, Dr. Renard.
Yeah, good night. Well, I guess that's that.
Oh.
Now, come on, fellas. We've got to make our way back to the joint.
Just a minute, please.
What? Blast.
We met earlier this evening. Remember? I am Major Kraus of the Gestapo.
Oh, yeah. Hiya, Major. What can we do for you?
Let me see. You were Pierre Gillemont.
No, I believe that was my card.
Yeah, mine said Jean Moreau or something like that.
It does not matter now.
No.
Come. My men are waiting to escort you to the headquarters of the Gestapo chief for Marseille.
Oh, what's the chief's name?
Colonel Wilhelm Reiber.
I never heard of him.
Nor I.
This way, please.
The three. They have been arrested by the Gestapo.
Sure.
I went to Dr. Renard to wait for them and bring them back here like you said.
Yes.
And the major, who was here tonight, drove up with his men. I hid in the shadows. When the three come out, the major arrested them and took them to Colonel Reiber's headquarters.
Oh, that means the Gestapo will be here soon for us.
Yes.
Quick, Charles. Gather as many of the men as you can in a half hour and go to the meeting place in the catacombs under the Church of Saint Victor.
But you, Jeanette.
I will get the ones who are here and we'll be there waiting for you. We've got to work fast or it may be too late. Hurry, Charles, hurry!
Of course you know, Miss Manning, Mr. Barry, Mr. Peabody.
Peabody, Colonel Reiber.
Forgive me.
Now, don't let it happen again.
The penalty for those in your position is execution.
Yeah, against the wall.
But I should be inclined toward leniency in your case in exchange for your cooperation in a matter of concern to us.
Cooperation with Germany, Colonel Reiber, hasn't worked out too well for a lot of people we could name.
Those who would share our good fortunes must be willing to share our adversity.
Boy, and are you getting a load of that last stuff.
Bravo.
Enough of this.
Yeah, we're getting bored stiff anyway.
Why did you go to Dr. Renard?
Why does anyone consult a physician, Herr Colonel?
We have reason to believe Dr. Renard is linked with the underground movement here. And you can save your life.
Now, but... you're barking up the wrong sycamore about the doc, Colonel.
What do you mean?
Tell him, Carol.
I brought a message to Dr. Renard from the Allied Mediterranean Command, begging him to leave the underground movement here because of his great influence with the people.
That's right, but the doc wouldn't buy it.
You're lying.
I wish we were.
In a way, you might say the doc is on your side, Colonel.
Yes, he refuses to encourage any resistance against the Nazis.
What about the girl, Jeanette?
Well, she serves pretty good wine for a joint like hers.
Why did you contact her?
We were thirsty.
She gave you a note for the doctor.
Directions how to get here.
Foolish! I'm giving you a chance to save your lives.
What's one more lie to a Nazi?
Major!
Yeah, Herr Colonel.
Take these swine below and lock them up. They have until dawn to give us the information we want. And if they do not...
Don't say it, Colonel. Let us guess, huh?
Take them away!
Brian.
Yeah?
What are you thinking about?
Same thing you are, I guess.
Oh, tell me. Let me see.
I love you, Carolyn.
And I love you. Oh, Brian, darling. I was thinking about something else, too.
What?
Can't you guess?
No, I can't.
Can you, George?
Hmm? Afraid not, old gal.
I was thinking about Christmas Eve, when we were in Bethlehem.
Oh.
We were in a pretty tight spot then, too. And remember what got us out of it?
Yeah, I sure do.
That's why I'm not afraid now. And neither are you or George. Because we've got faith.
That's right.
What time is it?
A few minutes of two.
Still a long time till dawn. And we didn't have nearly that much time in Bethlehem. We had barely a minute. And something's going to happen again. You know that, don't you, Brian, George?
Sure.
Yes, old girl.
Something's going to happen. Something. 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 Brian, listen.
Yeah, somebody's opening the door.
That something's happening right now, Brian.
I say, you're right.
Barry.
Yeah, who is...
Charles.
Charles.
I knew it, Brian.
I have taken care of the guard out here.
Yes?
We cannot go yet.
Well, how in the name of heaven did you get in here?
Oh, by the back way.
Oh.
When the sentry went to the far end of his post, I slipped through the door, made my way here, and silenced this guard before he knew what had happened.
Well, Well, come on. What are we waiting for?
We are waiting for the firing to start.
The firing?
We. Our men are going to attack the front of the building and draw all the guards in that direction.
Oh, I get it. Keep firing long enough for us to get out the back way. Huh?
Yes.
Joe.
Listen. The firing should begin any moment now.
Yeah.
And when it does, then we must go as quickly as we can.
Hey, don't worry about that, brother.
Now, wait and listen.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yes.
Get started, Charles.
Follow me,
Charles. Right behind you, old man.
Go in here.
Come on, yes, there we are. Wait,
man, oh, man, I bet those hinies thought the invasion had done come.
But the men, what about them?
Yes.
Well, they have made their getaway by now, before the Germans could organize any pursuit.
Oh, swell. Where to now, Charlie?
To the meeting place in the catacombs.
Catacombs?
Oui. Under the church of San Victor. Janet is waiting there for you.
Well, we're not going to try to thank you, Janet, for arranging that little job a while ago. We wouldn't know how.
Right.
We are all just so happy that it was successful.
Too bad that we weren't as successful on our mission tonight.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right. We kind of let you down there.
France needs men like him so much now, and in the days to come. Well, I do not know what your plans are for getting back to Algiers, but you are safe here as long as you need to stay, and anything we can
Janet,
do...
Janet, listen.
What is it, Charles?
Coming down the steps.
Dr. Renard.
Yes, Janet. Miss Manning.
Yes, Doctor.
Mr. Barry.
Doctor.
Mr. Pepperdy.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for coming to see me tonight.
You mean, sir?
Janet, have one of the men contact Allied headquarters in Algiers on the wireless, right away.
And the message?
I am at your service.
The New York office of the American Press and the London office of the British Press picked up wireless messages from Brian Barry and George X. Peabody. Barry's message read,
"This is coming to you from the secret meeting place of an important branch of the French underground. The leader who resigned recently has returned to his post, only because he knows there can be no hope for peace and freedom for France and the rest of the world until Nazism is crushed. But in his heart, there's still the same feeling that has crept into the hearts of his countrymen, and that is beginning to eat away also, pal, to lay it on the line, at the fighting spirit of those who are about to die. They feel that they have been double-crossed. That's what I said, double-crossed. Their leaders told them this was a war to save democracy, to establish the four freedoms for all people, a war for lasting peace. But now they see that it was all a lie, that all they're fighting for is a new map and a new set of masters, and that their blood might just as well have been poured down a sewer. Are they wrong? Look at the headlines and read them and weep, pal. Love. Barry. P.S. This is for those who follow the scrapes that George X. Peabody, Carol Manning, and I get into. You will not hear from us at this time next week. We plan to stay in France and wait for the invasion. But we hope you'll join us again another time when we cover what will be our most dangerous assignment. Until then, so long. Faithfully yours, Brian Barry.
Foreign Assignment, created and written by Frank H. Ferries and directed by Chick Benson, stars Jay Johnston as Brian Barry, with Maurice Wells as George X. Peabody and Vicki Vola as Carol Manning.
Foreign Assignment on Tuned to Yesterday from January 8, 1944 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. And now we bring you The Man Called X, starring Herbert Marshall. This is a relatively rare broadcast from September 4th, 1947 on CBS.
Herbert Marshall is Ken Thurston, The Man Called X.
Space and time can play funny tricks with a man. For instance, 6 weeks ago, an American flying boat was en route from Singapore to Manila. Over the South China Sea, 1,000 miles from nowhere, someone entered the pilot compartment.
Hey, what's the big idea? Don't you know nobody comes in here without a purpose? Oh, wait a minute. No! No! Oh!
That plane was never heard from again. But 6 weeks later, I'm 1,500 miles away on a dirty side street in Saigon in French Indochina. Two men stood looking at the body of a third.
Mon Dieu, it is Professor Gibbons. But this is incredible.
I do not understand, Inspector Abbey.
Jean, this man you see lying there died 6 weeks ago.
But this is not possible, Monsieur l'Inspecteur. His body is still warm.
Nevertheless, Jean, it must be so. I know him. He is American. And he was on board the plane that disappeared at sea 6 weeks ago.
Then, 12 hours later, halfway across the world in Budapest, I got a phone call from New York City. Hello.
Ken, there's a plane waiting for you at the airport. It'll fly to Tehran. From there, a charter job will go nonstop to Karachi, India. Your papers are cleared to there. The rest of the arrangements you'll have to make yourself.
Nice work, Chief. But now, stop making like a travel bureau and tell me what's up.
I don't know. That's what I want you to find out.
Yeah, where?
In Saigon. Ken, you remember a flight from Singapore to Manila?
That missing plane, sure. What about it?
Well, that plane was carrying some of the finest scientists our country ever had. All of them experts on the Pacific. They were just completing a round-trip survey of our mandated islands. A darned important survey.
I know. It's about time some 2 million natives out there got a crack at real civilization, freedom, and education. Yeah, but, Chief, why call me about it here in Budapest?
I just got a cablegram from Police Inspector Abbey in Saigon.
Abbey?
Yeah, Professor Gibbons, one of the anthropologists aboard that plane, turned up there a few hours ago. Dead. A knife in his back. Murdered. Think you can make sense out of that?
I'll let you know, Chief. From somewhere in French Indochina.
done, Monsieur Thurston. I'm Inspector Beaumont of the French police. Welcome to Saigon.
Thanks. Only, I didn't know I was expected.
Mais oui, monsieur. We have been notified. Our facilities are at your disposal, including one automobile. This way, please. Chief Inspector Abbe has been awaiting your arrival with great anticipation.
Abbe, now he's the one who identified Professor Gibbons, isn't he?
Oui, monsieur. The inspector had met Monsieur Fitzgerald before the war.
Uh-huh.
When he was conducting anthropological expeditions in Cochin China. So he has more than an official interest in this affair. Oh, here is my automobile, monsieur. If you will be pleased to enter.
Oh, thanks very much.
I assure you, the pleasure is entirely mine. Mr. X.
I see you coming round, Mr. Thurston.
Oh, thanks for telling me. What goes?
You're in the back room of Le Cher Noir, a native cafe here in Saigon. I'm Arlene Nelson. I've just cut the ropes around your wrists and ankles. We'll go into the cafe as soon as you're ready.
Short, sweet, and to the point.
That's the way I like things to be.
Beaumont liked them that way, too. You grow your police inspectors pretty rugged out here.
That was a gag, Mr. Thurston.
Yes.
He's not with the police. He owns this place. Lucky for you, I saw his boys carry you in here.
Well, what's his interest in me? And yours?
The mutual interest of the three of us. The throne of Tainin.
Huh?
I think we can beat him to it if we work together, Mr. Thurston.
Tainin. Two questions, Miss Ivy.
Shoot.
What makes you think I'm interested in this throne? And if I am, why should I string along with you?
Two heads are better than one, Tain. Besides, you're smarter than Professor Gibbons was. Smart enough to know what to choose when it's between $2 million and death. This table will do, Ken. The native I want you to meet can see us clearly from here.
What makes you think he's going to sell you information about this throne of Tainin?
In the game we're playing, Ken, nothing talks but dollars.
$2 million of them?
That figure makes sense.
I'm not sure you do, though.
When this little business deal is over, I'll try to change your mind. I think you'll find that worth waiting for, don't you?
Maybe I've taken worth gambles.
Eileen! Darling, here you are. It's Todd or Saigon looking for you.
Oh, hello, Stuart. This is Ken Thurston. Ken, this is Stuart Harding.
How are you?
An oil company geologist out here.
Thurston, how are you, old man? What an introduction. An oil company geologist. You know, I think my burning passion for you is much more noteworthy, my dear. Oh, no. Oh, that atrocious music. Well, I'd rather dance to it and try to talk through it. Do you get my lead?
I think Ken should have something to say about that.
Oh, you won't mind, will you, Thurston? There's a native soothsayer making the rounds of the table. Have him forecast your future. Might be interesting. Come along, Eileen.
All right, Stuart. I'll get rid of him. Be right back, Ken.
May the blessings of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva be upon thee, O noble Saeed. Did you signal to me?
Come off it, Pagan.
Pagan? What kind of a peculiar name is this?
It's even more peculiar when you enter with Zellschmidt.
Mr. Thurston, I would like you to know that the name of Zellschmidt goes back to the dawn of history. If it's such a funny name, how come Mark Anthony Zellschmidt could make time with that cute little cookie Cleopatra? And how did you know it was me?
Pagan, there's not a turban or a fake beard in the world that can hide the dollar signs in your eyes.
Huh?
What are you doing in Saigon?
Well, it's a long-said story. And the saddest part being this is a lousy racket. Fortune-telling. Wait, there's no future in it.
Then give me a reading about the present. Pagan, what do you know about the murder of Professor Gibbons?
I didn't do it. I got friends who'll give me an alibi.
Can those underworld friends of yours give you information about the throne of Tainin?
Huh?
Or its connection with Professor Gibbons and a missing plane over the South China Sea?
Mr. Thurston, I haven't heard from nothing but thrones, missing planes, or murders.
Okay. But something connects the three and us. Take a look at that table to the left.
The table to the... Mr. Thurston, I don't think that native over there likes them. Look how he's glaring.
Friend of yours?
Don't be funny. He's a dacoit. And you know what a dacoit is?
Yes. That's Cochin China for torpedo.
And torpedoes kill people. And I don't like the way he's looking at us. Mr. Thurston, someone turn out the light.
Curse of shame of your party.
Look out, Pagan.
Death to the unbeliever.
Mr. Thurston. Harrison, what happened? Why doesn't somebody turn on the light? Why doesn't somebody turn on the light?
You should only open your eyes, Fagon. You'll see that somebody has.
If I'd open my... Oh, you're right. The lights are back on. What was the big idea upsetting the table over me?
Take a look at my chair.
That knife right through what the back of it. The decoy did it.
Could be. And it could have been someone else.
It could have been Ken, but it wasn't.
You sound pretty sure, Eileen.
I am. I saw that decoy before the lights went out. He was the man who was going to tell us the information.
Apparently changed his mind.
Yes, and so have I. Our partnership is dissolved, Ken.
Oh? Why the sudden change of heart?
If the decoy wanted to play that rough, he must have known you were working for the other side. So from here on in, it's no holds barred, Mr. X.
Believe me, Mr. Thurston, this is positively without exaggeration the finest hotel room in all Saigon. You don't know how lucky you are. I found it for you.
For $20, I didn't need that kind of luck.
That attitude shows you just don't understand the foreign exchange. Figuring the rates of international interest and...
Yeah, save your breath, Pago. The hotel clerk told me you only gave him $5 for the room.
He did, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course. You wouldn't take the word of that thieving, no good racketeering hotel clerk against mine, would you?
Sure.
Oh.
You can stop right there, Thurston.
Well, our impassioned oil geologist. Oh, howdy.
That's right, Thurston. Glad you remember me.
I never forget a face behind a gun.
I'm going to make this short and sweet. Stay away from Eileen.
What's the matter, jealous?
Well, not of you, Thurston. The throne of Tainin. You understand?
No.
Well, then I'll make it clear. For centuries, men have killed for the jewels in that throne. I'm not going to let you lead Eileen to her death, too.
She's hard of the tide to be led around, Hardy. Or hadn't you noticed?
I know. She inherited more than Thor's thunder from her father.
Thor's thunder?
It's a schooner she has down at the docks. The one he used when he was a freebooting pirate. I'm not going to let her wind up the way he did.
Why not talk it over with her instead of...
All right, let me have that gun.
Go on my arm, Thurston. Go!
Sure. As soon as you drop it.
All right.
Get it, Pickle.
As good as got.
Okay, Hardy. Now, let's get some things straight. I don't like guns being waved in my face.
I guess I had acted like a fool, Thurston. I'm sorry. How can I apologize?
By answering some questions, fast. What's the throne of Tainin? And what do you know about Professor Gibbon's connection with it?
I thought you knew. The throne is a fabulous legend in Cochin, China. It had been lost for centuries, and Professor Gibbons claimed to have found it just before the war broke out.
Go on.
Well, as thrones go, it was a comparatively small affair, easy for him to hide away when he left Saigon just before the Japanese invaded.
I see.
So now it's just sitting somewhere, waiting for someone to find it. And the $2 million worth of jewels encrusted on it.
Eileen thinks she can find it?
Yes, but she doesn't stand a chance. Not with Beaumont, with the coit who almost knifed you and the other murderers and cutthroats who are trying to find it, too.
You're not helping her by shoving guns into people's faces, Hardy.
I know. I must have been out of my mind. But first, and I'd do anything in this world to keep her out of trouble over that throne.
Then relax and let me take over. I'll do my best to keep everyone out of trouble, including me.
This is ridiculous. Looking for Eileen Nelson's boat at this hour of night?
Is it?
Of course. Anybody could tell you that looking at that pretty petunia that she's innocent like a baby. She has nothing to do with nothing.
Any better suggestion?
Sure. Beaumont. He's the man you want. Such a no good. You know, he wouldn't even pay me a salary when I was working at his cafe.
That doesn't prove he's guilty of anything. Just sensible. Here's the boat. Let's go aboard.
Sneaking aboard a ship... this way. What if somebody sees her?
Don't worry, Pagon. No lights showing. Probably no one aboard.
And then what do you expect to find her anyway?
Clues.
To what? That gorgeous throne?
To the missing American scientist. Let's try the main cabin. That should be it. Go in.
What did I tell you? There's nothing in here.
How can you tell without any light?
My natural trust in that Eileen Nelson.
I'd rather trust this flashlight. There.
You see? Just like I said, there's... Mr. X.
Well.
It's the throne. That's the throne of Tainin.
Yeah, all $2 million worth. sitting right in the middle of the cabin aboard Eileen's schooner. Now, where's your natural trust in her?
I won't believe it. Beaumont fooled her. He fooled her into telling him use this place to hide the throne.
What was, Pagan? If anyone's been fooled, it's Beaumont. Look. Look on the floor behind the throne.
On the floor behind?
Yeah. With a knife in his heart.
This is an unfortunate affair, Monsieur Thurston. Very unfortunate indeed.
Especially for Beaumont, Inspector Abbey.
If you had only come directly to me upon your arrival in Sago...
Well, that was the general idea. Only Beaumont and Eileen Nelson put a crimp into it.
Yes, so you have told me. But I fail to see the connection between them and the throne of Tenin with your original mission here.
I don't see it either, but maybe I can guess.
Guesswork is not considered good police practice, monsieur.
Then let's look at facts. Professor Gibbons was the only man who knew the location of the throne. He was also a member of the missing scientific mission.
And what does that prove, monsieur?
Nothing except that $2 million is worth a lot of risk to some people.
I'm afraid I do not follow you, monsieur. The path of your logic is very faint indeed.
No path too faint to follow if those men are still alive at the end of it, Inspector. If you don't believe me, check with a couple of million natives in the Pacific. Whose future welfare might be set back a generation if those scientific findings are lost. Okay, Inspector, there's the schooner. Let's go aboard and look at some other facts.
Very well.
Maybe they'll help you change your mind.
Well, perhaps, monsieur, though I'm inclined to doubt it. Well, I thought you said the ship was deserted. The light is shining up the companionway.
I left Pagan on guard. His bravery in the presence of dead bodies goes only so far. And it's non-existent in the dark.
So, the throne is in the main cabin?
Yeah, right in here. You can face some facts for yourself.
Huh. What is this, Thurston? Your idea of a joke?
My sense of humor is better than that, Inspector.
But this room...
Yeah. No Pagan, no Beaumont, no throne.
You have there our entire file on the case of Professor Gibbons, Monsieur Thurston. We investigated everything, even the earth found on his shoes and clothing.
Is this your laboratory's analysis of that earth?
Oui, Monsieur Bart.
Mostly silica, high alkaline rating, 85 pH.
Yes, 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 but we got nowhere. So far as we could tell, Professor Gibbons disappeared aboard that plane and reappeared in Ségon out of thin air just a moment before he died.
All of which brings us right back where we started from.
Ah, and that is?
The key to the missing expedition. That lies in the missing throne.
Ah, Monsieur Thurston, you still pursue a will of the wisp. Guesses, theories mean nothing without facts to back them up. Oh, pardon. Inspector Abbé qui parle?
Yeah, pardon, Monsieur l'Inspecteur. But we have just picked up a crazy man out of the river.
So, where is he?
Right here in the other office. He keeps raving, muttering something about an Uncle Achmed, a very peculiar case, monsieur. What shall we do with him?
Let me handle that one, Inspector. An old maniac friend of mine.
Oh, but of course, if you wish.
See you later, Inspector.
Good night, monsieur.
All right, Pagan, come along. We've got work to do.
And that's what happened, Mr. X. It was stuff in that cabin. I went up on the deck for a breath of fresh air.
And somebody did what I've often been tempted to do.
Huh?
Conked you over the head.
Mr. Thurston. Well, anyways, the next thing I knew, I'm making like a fish in a river. I never want to see boats in water again.
That'll make it kind of tough for you. You're going back to the docks right now.
Huh?
I want you to hire a speedboat, Pagan, with a cruising range of at least 60 miles.
What are we going to do?
I'll let you know as soon as I see a geologist. And find out what silicon 85, pH 10.5 really means.
There's no doubt about it, sir. From the analysis you've given me, that soil can come from only one place in Indochina. The island of Kwailung.
Kwailung? Where's that, Harry?
It's a volcanic uprost some 20 miles down the coast. Geologically speaking, it's a beautiful specimen, but unfortunately, it can't be examined.
Why not?
Well, it seems the Japs left it booby-trapped with countless landmines. Several tourists were killed there last year, and the authorities have barred it to the public.
Oh.
I hope I've helped you, Thurston. Sort of makes up for the way I behaved earlier. But may I ask what your interest is in this soil?
Professor Gibbons died in Saigon, Harding, but the dust on his shoes came from the island of Kwailung.
some steamboat, eh, Mr. Thurston?
She handles like a charm, Pedro. Where'd you get it?
What does it matter? A Zellschmidt always knows where to get luxury items.
With other people's money, eh?
Which is besides the point. I got you the boat. We're going out to that one Long Island.
Why long? Quite
whatever long. It is, and we're both happy. Except me.
Oh?
You don't tell me things. Why did you have to see this Harding to get the dope on the island? The police geometrist told you the same thing, given while I was with you.
Just double-checking.
On report?
No, on Harding.
What a suspicious character. I bet you suspect everybody. Even me.
Especially you.
Thank you.
This is the speedboat to I.D. Nelson's yacht, isn't it?
Speedboat to... Well, of all the ridiculous... I never heard... How did you know?
Because she's standing right behind you.
Don't be silly. How could she? I left her in the dark after... Miss Nelson, you triple-crossed me, and please put down that gun.
Let that be a lesson to you, Pagan. Never trust a woman.
Never trust a Zellschmidt, Eileen. Well, now what?
Now that I've learned where you're going and where the throne is, I'm taking over. Any argument?
Oh, no. Just a word of advice. Watch out for this wheel. It pulls a little to port.
Oh, you fool! We're heeling way over. We...
Let's have that gun, Eileen.
A pretty smart trick, Ken.
Drop that thing, or just to take it away from you.
No. No, Ken. You don't have to take it away from me. I'll drop it.
Don't worry about a thing, Mr. X. I have the wheel. We're back on course again.
Good work, Pagan.
Are we back on course again?
Hmm? What's that supposed to mean?
You're still holding me. And you know I like it.
Quite a change of pace, I mean.
It's not really, Ken. Remember last night at Le Chat Noir? Remember what I said about a certain moment being worth waiting for?
Well?
Maybe we won't have much longer to wait now.
Let's talk about that when this is all over.
No, don't waste precious time, Ken.
What?
There's a seaplane flying overhead, following the same course. And if it's flying where I think it is, you and I may never leave the island of Kwai Lung alive.
Mr. Thurston, I don't like this. How can we land in this place? People get killed here by bombs and things.
Not even know where to land, Pagan.
What kind of a talk is this? Who knows where to land?
That oil slick in the water is going to tell us.
Huh? I don't get it.
It seems to be flowing out from that underbrush, Ken.
Yep. Yeah. And that's where we're heading.
Mr. X, you're driving this thing right into those bushes.
Ken, you were right. A harbor's behind the overhanging brush.
Yep. Complete with landing dock, seaplane and all. That's where the oil slick was coming from.
What are you going to do now, Ken?
Look for the pilot of that plane.
Huh?
And the throne of Tineen. And the missing expedition.
To leave Pagan alone on the dock.
No, it would have been smarter to leave you there, too.
Not for me, it wouldn't.
Don't trust me?
I trust no one where $2 million are concerned.
Huh? Hold it, Eileen.
What is it, Ken?
Look down that slope. The small clearing over there.
Ken, look at them.
Yeah. Ragged, bearded, in chains.
The men you were looking for?
Yeah. Brilliant men of science, chained down there like animals. Oh, thank God they're still alive.
Save your thanks, Thurston. They won't be for long.
Inspector Abbey.
Yeah, that's the executioner's gun in your hand, Abbey.
It is, Thurston. I've had it ready, waiting for you. But you disappoint me. You do not seem the least surprised at my being here.
Why should I be? Your own geologist knew that the soil on Gibbon's shoes came from here, but you made no attempt to investigate.
Ken!
Sure. He knew Gibbons had hidden the throne, and when he learned Gibbons was off on that scientific mission, he decided to go after it.
Quite right, Thurston. It was simple to board that plane at Singapore with my police credentials. Even more simple to dispose of the crew and fly the plane here to Kwai Lung.
Only Gibbons proved stubborn, didn't he, Abbe? He wouldn't tell you where the throne was hidden, and when he escaped from here and made his way to Saigon, you caught up with him and killed him. All right, Abbe.
Ken, no!
Stand back. Your time will come soon enough.
Yeah, like Beaumont. What happened there, Eileen? Did Beaumont make a deal with you to get the throne aboard your schooner?
Yes, Ken, but I didn't trust him. I went looking for you. While I was away from the ship...
Yeah. Abby had him killed. The throne was put aboard the seaplane, and Abby flew it out here today to keep undercover until it was safe to dispose of the jewels.
You are a very clever man, Thurston. Unfortunately, for your own welfare, you are too clever. So the time has arrived for that execution I mentioned. What the devil?
Sounds like somebody's latching onto your throne, Abby.
No, it's not possible.
Let's argue later. Oh!
Ah. Oh. Flyer, shouldn't that plane entrance distract you, maybe? Look what happened to you.
This is no time to admire your handiwork, Ken. We've got to stop that plane.
Why, it's not going anywhere.
What do you mean?
Pagon can't fly.
Pagon?
Sure. I didn't know whether Abby would show his hand while we were here or stay hidden. Either way, I figured that motor starting would bring results. It did.
So, Ken, as usual, Mr. X has successfully completed his mission. And now what are your plans?
Well, that depends on what turns up, Ivy.
And if it should be the offer of a South Sea Island cruise that turns up aboard a good seagoing schooner named Thor Thunder?
No. I'm afraid not.
But why not? We're two of a kind, roaming the byways of the world for danger and adventure. We play the same kind of game, Ken.
Oh, no, Eileen. I was gambling for those scientists. You and Abby gamble for $2 million against the future welfare of 2 million people. No, Eileen. Things we stand for are on opposite sides of the fence. A constant battle between us. You said it yourself. With no holes barred. The Man Called X. Good night.
The Man Called X on Tuned to Yesterday from September 4th, 1947 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.